On this episode of Baseball Barbacast, we will celebrate in full the 2024 Los Angeles Dodgers. The entire point of this whole baseball thing is to win the World Series, so we might as well shine a little extra light on the team that did it before rushing on to free agency. Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world who believes that the World Series should also be decided by the Electoral College. I'm Jake Mintz. That's Jordan Schusterman. And what does Pennsylvania think about the Dodgers?
Well, I know Pennsylvania is not super satisfied with how this postseason went. Either side of Pennsylvania, I would imagine. I can't speak as much for the middle. Big week in America, Jake. And we are going to keep talking about baseball as we have a Dodgers parade to review. We wanted to give more time to this 2024 Dodgers team, and that parade gave us a whole pod's worth of content. However, we're going to keep the parade chat to a relative minimum because we wanted to kind of go bigger picture about this 2024 Dodgers season. Don't worry, we are aware there have been some moves that have been made, some hot stove related happenings that we are going to get to at least a couple at the end of the show. But obviously, we will kind of really shift into offseason mode in our next episode, whenever that is. But let's focus on the Dodgers first, Jake.
And here's why. This very specific week of baseball I find fascinating, because what you have is one fan base who doesn't want to think about the hot stove, and then 29 fan bases who don't want to think about the World Series at all. They are ready to start chatting about free agency. And that is because either you're the Yankees and you lost in heartbreaking fashion, or you're one of the other teams that hasn't done a baseball game in a month, right? And so it is totally reasonable to start looking ahead. However, I think it is important to take a breath and spend some time on the team that won the whole thing, because we spent so much time talking about the trades and the signings and the people and the strategies that when you actually win the thing, when it's over and there's a parade and confetti and a trophy and drunk people on a microphone, that's the whole point. And so for us to just drive by this Dodgers team feels incomplete and unsatisfactory. So what we're going to do on this episode a little bit later is draft our favorite things about the 2024 Dodgers. But before we do that, we do need to talk about the parade.
Yes. And I think the obvious place to start with this, and maybe we'll get into this a little bit with the draft, but this is really what the team, what Clayton Kershaw, particularly what anyone who was on that 2020 team that won it all, this is what they had been waiting for. They did not need the validation. I know you heard some stuff from Walker Buehler, and we've talked about the show about how the players that won in 2020 wanted a quote unquote real one. But I think a lot of that is everything that comes with it, right? It's not that 2020, that winning a shortened season and winning a bubble World Series wasn't an achievement. That was an achievement. And we've talked about that. That was a championship that was very impressive. However, they did not actually get to celebrate it as such, most notably with the hundreds of thousands, millions of people in Los Angeles who showed up for this. Whenever we see crowd estimates, I always have no idea what to make of them. All I know is, my gosh, was that a lot of people? You had hilarious quotes from people like Tyler Glasnow saying, "I didn't know this many people existed." Hey, Tyler, who do you think you're sitting in traffic behind? anyway.
Funny quote. Funny quote for a guy like him who's very worldly and has gone on trips around the globe.
And I know. And I'm sure he was half kidding. But it was a great way to kind of... But a lot of the players were like, I didn't... And I genuinely think that they meant this when they were asked by, David Vesse or Kirsten Watson, did you realize how many people cared about this? And they were like, honestly, no. When you see this many people showing up, because yes, Dodger Stadium is the biggest major league stadium, but that's only 50,000 people. You know, this is, you know, that times a lot, and it's spread all over throughout a giant city like Los Angeles, and then filling the stadium again for kind of the end of the parade. So it was an incredible scene, as most World Series parades are, but this really was one of, just the magnitude of this one was pretty staggering. And let's just start rattling off some of our favorite moments. I watched most of this live. I don't know any other bigger picture things you wanted to get onto before we get to specific moments.
Well, best part about a World Series parade, you can say whatever the hell you want. I mean, you have kind of carte blanche here, right? Everyone assumes you're drunk. And so you just take the mic and you could say a bunch of stuff that you never would have said on the record a week earlier.
Yes. And that is obviously on display in many ways. So, I mean, again, you know, of course, you start with what one of my favorite things about watching a parade is who's on what bus. You know, it usually seems pretty random, but sometimes you see, okay, all the relievers want to be, you know, hanging out together. Oh, you see, you know, maybe some of the Latin guys are, you got the Dominicans, you know, are hanging out together. No, this one was, boy, was it a random range of players. And I think that kind of was a good way of showcasing the Dodgers in a lot of sense, is that you had, you know, Ohtani and his dog, you know, hanging out with Teoscar, Ohtani hanging out with Kike. It was everything, the whole range. Brent Honeywell and Clayton Kershaw, you know, arm in arm. I mean, it was, everything was fully on display there. I mean, again, we can get to once we got to Dodger Stadium and the most notable things that were said. We have to shout out Jack Flaherty first, because this is an important World Series topic. Jack Flaherty, certainly one of the more inebriated players on this route. He certainly had a great time. Of course, a team that has meant a lot to him his whole life, getting to celebrate a World Series. He was very honest. He's like, look, I didn't pitch well in Game 5, and it didn't matter. My teammates picked me up. But Jack Flaherty was wearing a T-shirt that said, "Jobs finished." Now, an important part about this, which is related to the other time we brought this up a year ago, related to Evan Carter, which I will explain in a second, which is that this seems to be a more specific reference to Kobe Bryant. Because obviously, part of what a lot of athletes like to reference, which is Kobe when he was in the finals and they were up 2-0 and the media member was like, "Hey, Kobe, why aren't you happy?" He was like, "Job's not finished. Job's finished. Job's not finished." So is that the first ever "Job's not finished"? I'm not sure, but that's certainly one that a lot of people like to reference. Certainly Jack Flaherty, a giant Kobe Bryant fan, certainly for the Dodgers. However, this was very refreshing, because a year ago, when Evan Carter was handed a phone to react to the Rangers winning the World Series, and he said, "Rangers fans,
on
we
the
got
field.
It. On the
on
field.
On the field.
They have won the World Series." And Evan Carter said, "Rangers fans, we did it, but job's not finished." And we said, "Evan, no, my friend, the job is finished. It is over. You do not have to do anything else." It was very nice to see someone who understood that the job was clearly finished, and that is why he was very, very drunk.
That job finished. Another job not begun. Haven't even started
it's a different job, is the point.
Different job.
His job is finished. Thank you, Jack Flaherty.
Other amazing moments. Kike just flaming Fat Joe. Confirming what we had suspected, that the lifeless Fat Joe performance at Yankee Stadium did indeed create a utter vibe suck for the Yankees and propel the Dodgers to victory.
And I don't know if Kike specifically referenced, because his line, the punchline was basically, "Ice Cube came out, we already won. Fat Joe came out, and we already won." That was basically his line. I don't know if he referenced the fact that Fat Joe was also shown on the Jumbotron minutes before the fifth inning in Game 5, but that is also a thing that happened. So that was tough for Fat Joe. I don't know how he is ever going to recover from that. So Kike was obviously saying a lot of very funny things. A couple great Mookie moments, I would say. Mookie. Now, again, this is a kind of a more common version of "Job's Not Finished," which is, "I want more championships." And for Mookie Betts, who now has 3 World Series rings, he gave him a line which is basically like, you know, "Oh, I've only been here a few years. I got 2. I got 9 more years. You know, I'm trying to fill up this hand with World Series rings," which is just an incredible line. And again, we could talk about how likely that is. I know it sure feels likely in the moment, but that was very cool. Max Muncy referring, he said, "Hey, Mookie, what do I tell you when they intentionally walk Shohei to get to you?" And then Mookie said, "I got 400 too." Which is true. Only so many baseball players have $400 million guaranteed to them. And Mookie Betts is certainly one of them. Any other, I mean, again, there's so many to get to, but any other favorite moments?
Dave Vassay asking Shohei if he was going to take his shirt off like Kike, and Ohtani hitting him with no. No.
He said, no, never in English. No Will Ireton necessary. He's like, yeah, that will not be happening.
Will, could you... actually, you know what? I'm good. I got this one.
Walker Buehler, obviously. Was there ever a more obvious public F-bomb than giving Walker Buehler a mic? I mean, his whole just aesthetic over the course of this day, wearing Oral Hershiser's game-worn 1988 World Series jersey with a beer bong kind of wrapped around his neck... I mean, he was in top form. And honestly, I actually don't think they ever gave him the mic to like fully speak.
Good.
They knew. He did, you know, sneak in a couple MFers without being asked. But that was fantastic. And then a couple other things. I mean, Brent somehow got the mic, which was amazing. Thanks to Max Muncy. He was like, Honeywell, speak to him. I was like, oh my God, this is a bad idea. He obviously dropped some F-bombs. And then the last three things that I have to mention. One, Teoscar Hernandez was our most visible tears when he was asked to speak. You know, once he got the mic, that was very cool. There's a lot of Teo related things. I'm writing about him this week, his free agency and everything that goes into that. So he's super interesting to me. And then the last funny one that we have to mention is just Dave Roberts. They basically reprised the Ice Cube performance. Like he literally ran it back. Yeah. Like whatever audio settings they had, they just did the same thing, same two songs and everything. And Dave Roberts just getting after it. With Ice Cube, which he was not able to do quite to the same degree before the game when they were playing. Now he was letting it eat. I mean, this was a really, I don't know how drunk Dave Roberts was, but he was having a good time.
Dave Roberts during the Ice Cube line, and if I hit the switch, I can make the ass strap, where he like grinds on Ice Cube and like rubs his butt up against him was just all time, yes. All time. Hilarious.
This is great. Again, who's going to tell you no? And then the last thing, I just think the last topic here is Clayton Kershaw.
Yeah.
Because I don't really know how much we're going to necessarily talk about him when we talk about the full season, because in reality, he wasn't a huge part of it. He was, of course, one of the pitchers that got injured. But Clayton Kershaw, when you talk about what this meant to people, when you talk about who was looking forward to this day the most, I mean, when they won in 2020, he was the story in a lot of ways, right? Of course, it was they got Mookie Betts and they were, you know, they had Corey Seager and all those things. But like, I'll remember Clayton Kershaw running out of the bullpen in Texas almost as much as any other of those final scenes of that game. But this is really what he's been looking forward to. And that was really all the interviews, all him speaking on the mic, him talking about how much, and he was very honest being like, you know, we know we've kind of done this dance the last few years. Oh, is he going to go back to play for the Rangers? And this was clearly, he was like, no. This is where I belong. This is where I always belong. And you know, I'm so glad, right? I guess there's another world where he ended up going to the Rangers and he isn't a part of this celebration. Maybe he's part of last year's celebration. Who knows? Whatever. That's kind of a weird thought. But the fact that Kershaw got to have this was so incredibly cool. And the fact that he said, like, yeah, no, I'm coming back. So maybe he'll get to do it again and be a bigger part of the team. But either way, if anyone had earned it, regardless of what happened this season, it was just so, so, so cool to see Kershaw have that.
And he grabs the mic and he says, I didn't have anything to do with this championship, but it feels like I have the best feeling in the world that I get to celebrate with you guys. Unquote. I would disagree with I didn't have anything to do with this championship. Now, obviously, he threw, I think, 30 innings this year, which exactly 30 innings. He did not have a whole lot to do with the on-field contributions of this championship. But I think that the bar of excellence that Clayton Kershaw helped set over the last decade plus of being in Dodger Blue is a huge part of this championship. And it should be taken in some ways as like a career achievement award. Would it have been somehow more fulfilling for Kershaw to have won in like 2019 when he came out of the bullpen? Let's say he like strikes out Juan Soto and Anthony Rendon in game five of the NLDS, like maybe. But there's something cool about it being more than your pitches, right? The vibe you set has a real impact on the culture of a place. And I hope that Clayton Kershaw genuinely does not believe that he had nothing to do with this championship, because he very much did.
Yeah, and I'm sure that's just the competitor speaking in him, someone who has contributed to so many of these teams in the past. But to your point, I mean, it's not like this guy had to prove anything. This is he earned this more than basically anybody on the roster. And that is really something special. So that was the parade. If there are any other moments, Dodgers fans, if you were there, if there were moments that we missed maybe on the broadcast or things that were not necessarily captured, I'd love to hear from people that you know, actually were there and got to experience it. BaseballBarbercast@gmail.com. You can let us know. But yeah, I certainly enjoyed it. There was a lot of personality on display.
Before we take a break, we have one more task to achieve, and that is to flip off the narrative machine all October long. We have been ka-chunk, ka-chunk, booting up that narrative machine, sucking it out for all it's worth. But we must take that switch and crank it down. And there is one narrative I would like to dispel, one narrative I would urge fans of the 29 other teams to avoid. And that is, quote, the Dodgers bought it. The Dodgers just paid for this championship. They opened their wallet and they handed the credit card. They clicked the button on their iPhone twice and Apple paid for this trophy. It's not that simple. Because, Jordan, here's the thing. Isn't that the point? Isn't that what the money's for?
Yeah, I mean, I would like to think so. Isn't this what we like to see the money spent on? I understand that there's a level of frustration for any team that's not spending money to this degree, but I just cannot quite wrap my mind around this being a bad thing. I think something that we've talked about going into this postseason and certainly going into this World Series is the notion that once we got to Dodgers, Yankees, being like, oh, this is annoying. These are just the two teams that spend all the money on all the good players. And it's like, okay, yeah, but that doesn't normally happen. And in the world where the Dodgers win the next 10 World Series, yeah, that's going to get a little bit annoying, right? But based on the last 20 years of baseball, I have no reason to believe that is going to be the case. And that is why these Dodgers are celebrating this the way that they are, because as much as Mookie wants to say, oh, I want to win multiple more championships, and of course the Dodgers are going to have as good of odds as anybody else because they are investing in their team more than anybody else, it's not a guarantee. It's just not. And so, but when it all comes together and when you see the amount of investment in the product on the field, which is all you can ask for. That's why we're watching, is the baseball players who play baseball. And the Dodgers have consistently done what they need to do, gone as aggressive as you can to acquire the good baseball players in any means possible. That is a good thing. I don't really know why that would be a bad thing. I can understand being frustrated if your team isn't doing it, but that's not the Dodgers' fault.
I've said this a bunch. It's not like the money goes to a food bank, okay? It's not food bank or baseball free agent. That's not how this works, right? And I understand the frustration from a fan of another team seeing the Dodgers payroll start with a 3 and feeling disdain about that. But that disdain should not go to the Dodgers or their players or their management or their ownership group. It should go to the ownership group of the team that you care about. And like I sit here as someone who cares about the Orioles, and that the gap in final payroll in 2024 between the Orioles and the Dodgers was $222 million. I'm not going to sit here and pretend like that's not significant and that doesn't affect roster construction. Of course it does. But I'm more ticked off at the way that the Orioles went about constructing their team than the way that the Dodgers did. Now, yes, the Dodgers' ceiling is always going to be higher in terms of the money they can spend. And honestly, probably should be, right? Probably should be. However, it's not their fault. They are operating within the confines of the sport. And of course, they're going to dish out 20 whatever million to get Teoscar Hernandez on a one-year deal. Of course, they're going to give Yamamoto the highest contract ever for a pitcher. Of course, they're going to give Ohtani, you know, the key to the vault. Like, you wish that your team would too. So don't be mad at the Dodgers. Be mad at your own ownership group.
Yeah. And by the way, what it invites to is when they lose, as they very well might next year, you can laugh at them even more. That's all part. As you have been for the last 10 years, you know, and is likely going to be the case for a lot of the teams that are going to that are at the top and are spending a lot and are still falling on their face. That's part of it. But as Andrew Friedman has said, you'd rather be playing with those expectations and that pressure than playing for, you know, not really trying that at all, right? He'd rather be keep pushing and pushing and pushing. And I think the other thing is just that this team is an achievement of so much more than the payroll, undeniably. Yes, of course, the Stars showed up at the end. But I mean, you look, the Dodgers are in so many ways. This is, we talk about, you know, a career achievement award for Clayton Kershaw. This World Series is an achievement of everything that you can do to create a good baseball team. And that is, of course, at the top, investing in the best players, but it is also in drafting. It's in player development. It's in trading. It's in free agency. It's in international free agency. It's in, you know, analytics. It's in just like the old school grit that, you know, Dave Roberts looking into Blake Treinen's eyes and seeing if he can get this last out. Like, anything you want the Dodgers to be, it's really there for you. And that is also why, you know, they are so impressive and worthy of celebration, and why, when we come back from this quick break, we are going to keep talking about this team and draft our favorite things about the 2024 Los Angeles Dodgers. We'll be right back.
And welcome back to Baseball Barbercast. Jake Mintz, Jordan Schusterman. I'm Jake Mintz, he's Jordan Schusterman, just for clarity's sake. Neither me nor Jordan will ever run a baseball team. That doesn't stop us, preclude us.
Not with that attitude, man.
Not with that attitude.
We got a long way, a lot of years in front of us.
We still love drafting stuff, and that's what we're going to do now. Let's draft some stuff. Let's draft our favorite things about the Los Angeles Dodgers. We're each going to take five things. This is purposefully open-ended and vague, which gives Jordan real discomfort because he loves a little bit more constraint. And I'm always uncomfortable, so I'm fine. The only restriction here is that we can each only draft two Shohei Ohtani-related items, one off-field and one on-field. You get the first pick. You get the first pick. Okay. You're a good guy, so you get the first pick.
All right, thank you. Then I'm just going to take, again, there's no, this is going to go in a lot of different orders, a lot of different directions, but let's just get the obvious out of the way. I'm going to take Shohei's on-field performance. I'm going to take, that includes 50-50, that includes greatest DH season ever, that includes he didn't pitch and it didn't matter, he's still going to win the MVP. We have said this multiple times over the course of the season, but Shohei Ohtani was not, we were not considering him seriously for MVP in a real way. Like that, I think I picked Freddie Freeman. I think I've said this before. I'm pretty sure my preseason pick was Freddie Freeman, thinking about, oh, Shohei, what really he's going to do is boost Mookie and Freddie's numbers. But really what he did was, no, actually, I only have to worry about hitting right now, and I'm way better than I was the last time I only had to worry about hitting, and I have awesome teammates, and I want to run now, and I'm just going to put up one of the greatest single seasons that we've ever seen. And I think that all culminating in his day in Miami, which we will never, ever forget, is just one of the most astonishing things ever. And the fact that we have another 9 years to look forward to and him pitching again, like, that this two-way sensation could become a one-way a one-way season of a lifetime on its own is just fantastic, amazing. And it's so funny that we underestimated him to any degree. So Shohei on the field, I am taking number one. I know it did not necessarily translate all the way until the World Series, but he had some moments in the postseason. Let's not forget that Seti Field home run. Let's not forget that home run against the Padres and even that hit in game one that helped the Dodgers come back. So there wasn't nothing along the way. I know it wasn't the biggest World Series performance, but remember his shoulder was, you know, subluxed. So anyway, Ohtani on field is my first pick.
What a hilariously enormous, umbrella of things.
Like, if you want to take something more specifically, that's fine.
I thought about just taking that day in Miami.
That was definitely on my board. If you want, that's fine. But go ahead.
I'm not taking it now. My first pick, for the Dodger 2024 draft is the pitching injuries and all that encompasses.
Yes.
Because they, okay, so just for context, the Dodgers had 17 different human beings start a game this year on the mound. That is tied with the White Sox and behind only the Angels, who sucked, and the Marlins, who sucked. I believe that might be the three worst teams in baseball record-wise. I don't know. Rockies.
Yeah.
you get my point. This was not the plan. Okay. Now, are the Dodger pitching injuries somehow self-inflicted? Sure. The way that they maybe develop pitching and prioritize velocity maybe leads to more arm injuries. But that this team and this organization was sturdy enough to withstand this level of attrition is a testament to what they built. Of the top 10 pitchers in regular season innings, only five of them were on the playoff roster, and only two of them were starters. Okay, that's nuts. I'm just going to go in order quickly. Gavin Stone, hurt. Tyler Glasnow, hurt. Yamamoto started. James Paxton, just like jettisoned on waivers to the Red Sox. Whatever, sure. Fourth in innings on this team. Walker Buehler started. Landon Knack, totally butt. Although, bounced back later on in the World Series. People forget. We remember. Ryan Yarbrough, who knows? Daniel Hudson, retired, but pitched. Alex Vesia, pitched. And Bobby Miller. Remember Bobby Miller? Remember how important Bobby Miller was?
He was at the parade. There were a couple. Miller and James Outman were at the parade. And I was like, oh, yeah. They were supposed to be so good. They were both so good as rookies. And they were just non-factors this year.
40 different pitchers threw a ball for the Dodgers. Tied only with the Angels and only behind the Marlins. And it's like, that's supposed to sink you. And we thought it would. We really thought that's what the death knell was going to be for these Dodgers. That's the Achilles heel. That's why they would go down in the playoffs. And they just had enough quality up and down the roster, which is what the money's for, which is what the development's for, which is for, you know, they prepared a variety of different people to be ready to pitch in the playoffs when it mattered. And it's so impressive. They threw an enormous bowling ball at a bunch of talented pins, and whatever was left standing was more than enough to win a World Series. So for me, the pitching injuries and their ability to overcome it is my first pick.
Yes, I think that in terms of narrative is certainly way up there. I am going to select. I mean, again, we should just take more Otani stuff, but I'll leave it to you. I'm going to take Mookie Betts, the shortstop.
Mm.
And kind of just Mookie Betts' season, but Mookie Betts, the shortstop, I think encapsulates it where it's just like, you know what? He was like, you know what? I don't really, whatever you guys need. You need to play shortstop. Remember when he started playing some second and last year and we were like, oh my, or even I think he did a little bit. He did it like a handful of times in his first few years. I know he did it in 21 and 22. He played like a handful of games at second. We were just like, this guy's incredible. Like he could just show up and they can just ask him to play second base a couple times, like amazing. And he's like, actually, you know what's better than that? I'm going to start 60 games at shortstop because my team needs me to. Listen, was he an amazing shortstop? No. But the fact that he was able to do that when they needed him to do that, the fact that he was able to then after he got hurt, come back and just not be hitting leadoff anymore, even though he had been for however many years because Otani had been doing that. The fact that then when he gets to the postseason, he has arguably his best postseason that we've ever seen from Mookie Betts, all the while having an offensive season with a two-month interruption where he walks more than he strikes out for the first time in his career. Like there were sneaky things that Mookie was doing that we've talked about it. It's like at times after they won in 2020 and 21-22, even though he was still winning, you know, all these awards, he just didn't really seem, he was just kind of coasting, right? But this was a season where Mookie Betts was like, guys, not only do I only care about helping the Dodgers finally win another World Series because he realizes like, oh, I got a shot here to win, you know, multiple championships in a way that not a lot of players in my generation are going to be able to, but that he was able to carry that all the way through and perform at his best at the end of the season. He is, as Freddie Freeman said, one of the greatest players of all time, and we should not lose sight of Mookie Betts being able to just show up and play shortstop.
I am going to take, with my second pick, the fact that we don't need to debate the 2020 World Series anymore. Oh my goodness gracious. Look, the 2020 World Series and the 2020 season was weird and different, and I think should be in some ways picked apart and removed from many narratives. Like, go look at Dominic Smith's numbers that year. When we say most X in a full season,
Luke Voit, baby.
That's what we mean. It was a hall of mirrors, right? It was a haze of confusion. Yet what they did that year, what the Dodgers accomplished in October, was still impressive. But boy, am I happy that it just has zero, like, lasting narrative heft over this franchise. That these Dodgers, this era of Dodger baseball, has a ring. They did it in a full season that no one can pick apart, that no one can say, oh, it was Mickey Mouse, that, oh, it didn't matter. I just am so happy that that doesn't need to be thought about anymore. Now, if you want to say, well, they don't have two, like, okay, great, whatever. That's fine. They have one. And one is more than me or you or anyone else listening to this podcast will ever have.
Very good pick. Next up, I am going to go with something that's not on our board here. But it's really started to hit me, certainly the parade and just like generally reflecting on the season. And it is Walker Buehler. I am going to take Walker Buehler as his own as his own thing. Does that deserve to be picked above Ipe? We'll get to that in a second. But I think what Walker Buehler did this season and everything that went along with it, how big of a story he was just over the course of his Dodgers tenure. And how this will age, especially if this is the end of his Dodgers tenure. More on that a little bit later. But, like, this guy was part of the problem over the course of this regular season. Why can't Walker Buehler figure it out? He's throwing hard again. The stuff is there, and he just keeps getting crushed. What's happening? This is... But then, once you got to October, people were still saying, like, oh, no, he's going to turn it on. And I was kind of like, all right, like, I want to believe that's true. Because I enjoy watching Walker Buehler succeed. But the evidence is not screaming at me that that is what is going to happen. And he allows six runs to the Padres. And it does strikes out zero. And I'm just like, all right. Like, I mean, he's clearly able to still pitch four or five innings, which is something that the Dodgers need right now. But, like, this is still not the most satisfying potential end to his tenure. And for it to end with him going with consecutive scoreless starts and then closing out the World Series in relief is just an amazing sequence. And for a player who has also meant so much to this team, for a homegrown player who has meant so much to this team, right? The reality of this team, because of all the trades and the free agency, is that this roster and the production they got from this team was not nearly as homegrown as it had been over the last 10 years. That's a fact. But Walker Buehler is a big part of that. And while he was not contributing the wins above replacement very much in the regular season, for him to show up and be the guy on the mound for the last out is so cool. And I just think he's going to be now associated with this team forever in an extremely strong way, in a way that even if you told me they were going to win the World Series 3 weeks ago, I would not have expected him to be a big part of it.
I'm going to take Will Ireton with my third pick. Will Ireton, Otani's new translator. This... I don't want to fold in all the Ipe stuff because if we're drafting our
favorite... I'm taking
favorite,
it next. Don't worry. Don't worry.
Okay. Okay.
Like, focus on Will.
Is the Ipe thing my favorite thing about the Dodgers this season? No, but it's certainly relevant. But I'm going to focus on Will. Okay. Will Ireton joins the Dodgers in 2016 as Kenta Maeda's translator. And it's like, wow, this guy's pretty smart. So when Maeda leaves, they keep Will Ireton on as like a player development coach. Like, he's on the coaching staff in Oklahoma City, AAA, for multiple seasons. And it's like, sure, he's fluent in Japanese, and that's like a cool thing, but that's not like why he's around anymore. And then the ePay situation happens, and they're like, Will, Will, go translate for Ohtani. Will Ireton, as Ohtani's interpreter, was more visible than like most of the Dodgers this season.
Yes, yes. And this is the amazing thing about him. And to your first point about him still being on the staff for as long as he was, that is another example of kind of what I was getting at earlier about the Dodgers being so good at so many things. Their staff is gigantic. The number of people that and that's part of the advantage is you can have so many people because you're willing to invest in, again, every level of helping the baseball team win. And he, for a long time, was kind of part of that, like, secret underbelly of the Dodgers coaching staff and analytics group that was like always around and traveling or in the minors, but you didn't know who they were.
The deep state.
Exactly. But for him to transition into this role and to do it, I mean, not only to just be able to handle it, but to your point, the visibility. It's not that, obviously, over the course of, you know, Ohtani's career with the Angels, like, Ipe was very visible too. He was always there and had to always translate when Ohtani was talking all the time. But the amount of media obligations for Ohtani, even though I know he didn't speak as much as, you know, a lot of Dodgers media would want him to, the amount that he had to handle unplanned at the start of the season, right? When Will Ireton showed up to spring training, this was not on the docket of like, this is what your season is going to look like. For him to take on that responsibility and do it so gracefully and brilliantly is, and we don't even understand the half of it, right? But for him to literally be able to do that,
we literally don't understand half of it.
Yeah, probably more than half of it, but yes, to you, so that is a good point. Is astounding. So I think that is definitely a great pick. We salute you, Will.
It's just, dude, like the situation he was thrown into was wild.
Yes.
Wild. Wild, wild, wild. And look, I don't speak Japanese, so maybe he does a terrible job at translating. I'll
say, of all the, you know, Ohtani stan accounts that I follow, by all accounts, he's interpreting and translating a lot more accurately than Ipe ever was. So that is, I've seen many examples of that being shared. So, you know, credit to him. I'm not one to verify it, but I'm trusting people that speak the language, and it does seem that to be the case.
Most important thing about Will Ireton, Jordan, D3 baseball player. All right, who's your pick?
Shouts out Occidental. All right, my fourth pick. I'm going up full big umbrella again. I'm taking everything Ohtani off the field. All right. Now, if you want to zoom in on Korea and specifically what happened in Korea, I mean, you could just take like the 48 hours or whatever, 3-4 days in Korea as like its own pick, especially if you include Ipe. But just the year that we had from is he flying to Toronto to what is his dog's name to who he has a wife to his interpreter stole tens of millions of dollars from him, for all of that to be happening. And for him to not only continue to be one of the best baseball players on earth, but actually end up being even more beloved somehow through the whole thing because of his cute dog and his cool basketball playing wife is just, it's an unfathomable sequence of unflappability, I think would be the way to say it. The fact that this is how his season started in Korea, and for him to just be like, yep, all right, that was unfortunate, and this friend betrayed me in horrific fashion, and Will Ireton will step in, and I will just continue on being one of the best baseball players in the world. It is amazing. But everything last offseason, as we sort of started to learn more about Ohtani the person and Ohtani the personality, I think is also a big part of his first season in LA, because again, remember, we did not know anything about him at all from a personal life standpoint until, like, now we're so used to it because his dog is everywhere and his wife's going to games and all these things. But like, that was so impossible to think about. We just assumed we would never see anything like that. We assumed it would only be baseball with him all the time. And now that we have a little bit more of him, that side of him, I think is pretty fun. But obviously, all the Ipe stuff cannot be overstated, because it is one of the, at its core, let's not forget, extremely sad, right? I mean, obviously, there are a lot of jokes we made along the way because it was so patently ridiculous when we were reading the legal documents of him gambling on college soccer and all this stuff. But this is a betrayal of, you know, levels that we cannot, you know, possibly comprehend when you consider what that relationship was for so long. But that he was able to just keep rolling is just amazing. So, yeah, everything Ohtani off the field, man. Wow.
I am going to half challenge an outrageously broad
pick. I mean, again, zoom in. If you want to pick, you want to pick.
I understand. Yeah. Again, you could have taken dog. Hey. You could have taken wife. You could have taken Toronto plane. You could have, but you didn't. And the one thing I do want to say about Ipe, look, Jordan, if you stole $15 million from me or whatever, I wouldn't go 50-50. I don't think I could do that. Simple. My next pick.
Yeah.
My next pick is Freddie Freeman World Series performance.
That was, yep.
Because Freddie Freeman was so good in the World Series and was so hurt. And it wasn't just the ankle, as we learned after the fact, that my guy had a, quote, intercostal issue, as first reported by friend of the show, Chelsea Janes, and then further reported by friend of the show, Jeff Passan, that Freddie had like a broken rib or whatever. What a thing. And Freddie Freeman going from very, very good, well-liked baseball player to all-time postseason hero was very cool. I saw someone yesterday running the marathon in a Freddie Freeman jersey, which does not happen if he does not go off in the World Series. And so for Freddie Freeman to now be understood and known and appreciated to this level, I think is very cool. So that's my pick.
My last pick, I am going to take Teoscar Hernandez, actually. And again, I was thinking about him because I'm writing about him this week. But like, this was kind of an example of the Dodgers flexing their financial might, being like, yeah, sure, we can give you $23 million. That's fine. It seemed like a luxury at the time. But not only was he amazing, had the best season. I mean, can you have a better one-year deal for both player and team? I mean, this goes down in the one-year deal Hall of Fame. I mean, this guy raising his national profile with a home run derby win, becoming BFFs with Ohtani, having, you know, 137 OPS plus, returning back to his, you know, career highs, continuing to crush lefties, having a bunch of big postseason home runs, and then crying on the mic at the World Series parade. That's an amazing sequence. And I'll just say, that's not really how it went in Seattle, but I'm so happy for Mr. Teoscar Hernandez because he seems like an absolute delight. So I'll take him fifth.
I want to take Brent Honeywell with my last pick, but I'm not going to. I'm going to take the sheer scope of this team. When the Dodgers signed Ohtani and Yamamoto, a big part of that was because they wanted to enhance their global brand. Guess what? It freaking worked, because 15.8 million people, 50.9 million people in Japan alone watched game two of the World Series. They averaged 12.9 million viewers in Japan, easily the most watched World Series in the history in Japan. And so, like, more people caring about Major League Baseball because of how this team went about its business is cool as hell. And I think will leave a lasting impact on the sport in a really positive way. So I'm just going to take, I guess the way I would describe this pick is Dodgers as a global entity. That will be my final pick.
The big G, not Giancarlo Stanton, that Guggenheim patch on the side is spreading their brand. I know that's not what the people care about, but it is true. And that is a good way to spin forward, Jake. Because where are the Dodgers? Because where are the Dodgers beginning their season next year?
They are beginning it in Japan. I just want to review our draft here before take a break, if that's okay.
Sure.
You took Shohei on-field performance, Mookie Betts playing shortstop, Walker Buehler as a thing, Ohtani off-field, dog wife, Toronto victim of crime, and Teoscar Hernandez. And I selected pitching injuries, not having to talk about the World Series in 2020 anymore, Will Ireton, the interpreter, Freddie Freeman, the October hero, and Dodgers as a global entity. Let's take a quick break, and when we get back, we'll briefly touch on the Dodgers as they enter free agency and hit a couple hot stove nuggets before we say goodbye. And welcome back to Baseball Barbercast. Jake Bitts, George Schusterman. Let's turn the clocks ahead. Even though we turned them back over the weekend, we're not closing the book on the 2024 season just yet. For those of you who listen to this pod, we will do a time capsule episode at some point. But as it pertains to the Dodgers, what does their offseason look like? Who are their free agents? What is on their to-do list as the stove begins to get hot?
So Teoscar is the first one, and obviously he's been very clear about wanting to stay. I am more compelled by the pitchers and the different notes that Jack Flaherty and Walker Buehler finished their years on, right? Because Jack Flaherty, after being acquired great in the regular season, a little shaky in the postseason. Walker Buehler, bad in the regular season, this incredible finish to October. I guess I still expect Jack Flaherty to get more money, but I don't really know. It's very weird to try and predict those two. Of course, also Blake Treinen is a free agent. That is an important reliever. Kike, we know Daniel Hudson and Kiermaier retired. But yeah, Teoscar, of course, will be one of the better kind of second tier bats available. Are they able to retain him? If not, what is exactly does their outfield look like? Because otherwise, it seems like Mookie's days in the infield are probably done. But even if you put him back in the outfield, what is the rest of that Dodgers outfield going to look like? Is Tommy Edman the shortstop? Is he the center fielder moving forward? They only have him for one more year. And then the other big question about the Dodgers just moving forward is the number of pitchers that were obviously injured leaves the 2025 rotation in just a laughably unpredictable state. Here's what we think we know, which, by the way, we don't. Yamamoto. I assume he will start opening day, but maybe not. Who knows? Whatever. Yamamoto, great. We think he's healthy, looks good, looked awesome down the stretch in October, great. Glasnow, we assume he'll be healthy, right? You know, it was an elbow injury. He said it wasn't as bad as we thought. He wasn't able to pitch in October. Okay, Glasnow, great. We have him. We think that Shohei Ohtani is going to be ready to pitch next year, right? As far as we know. He also has a shoulder injury, not his throwing shoulder, but he's going to have to deal with that at some point. But after that, I mean, you have like 10 guys that you could reasonably be like, oh, maybe it could be him. Kershaw, who's apparently going to have knee and toe surgery this offseason. Gonsolin, who was throwing by the end of the year. Remember him? He was a big part of this rotation. Dustin May, Gavin Stone had shoulder surgery. Then you have all the TJ guys like Emmett Sheehan. Bobby Miller, is he going to be back in the mix or is he going to be traded or in the bullpen? Kasperius, of course, looked good. Knack and Robleski, who made starts. All these guys are presumably going to be competing. Some of them maybe are going to be in the bullpen. And then there's the possibility that they just sign Corbin Burns, right? So all of that is just, what does this rotation look like moving forward is fascinating. Obviously, a lot of options. Some of these guys, I'm sure, will still be hurt come spring training, come opening day. But it is a lot of options, but very hard to tell.
Booking it now. Here's the Dodgers starting rotation on opening day. Yamamoto, okay. Glasnow, Ohtani.
It's not Miller. Kershaw basically said it's.
I know. I'm going to say that. Okay. Miller, Kasperius. Okay? That's Jake Mintz's pick. Kershaw will be on the aisle to start the year. I'm going to say it again. Yamamoto, Glasnow, Ohtani, Miller, Kasperius. There you
My
go.
My prediction is it will be somebody that is not in the organization. I'm not saying it'll be Corbin Burns level. I think there will be a pitcher that is somehow not on this list of 10 that is going to be in the rotation on opening day. But man, that is the real question. But obviously, Mookie, Freddie, Shohei, they'll be hanging out, and that is what is most important.
They're going to sign Tomoyuki Sugano.
That would be if they really want to triple down on the on the Japanese brand. More on Sugano at a future date. Last thing, a couple other things before we say goodbye. So first of all, we're recording this on Monday morning. 5 p.m. tonight is the deadline for qualifying offers, for options being picked up, declined, all those things. We already have a good bit of those. We're going to push a lot of them to later this week. So before we get out of here, we just wanted to address a couple of them, and 3 minutes on the Gold Gloves, because I know Jake doesn't care about them very much. Let's do Gold Gloves quickly.
I don't care. Yeah, I know we will. I just quickly. Here's why I don't care. players really care about them and they're cool for the players.
That wasn't a reason. We need to give a reason. He said, here's why I don't care. And then he said,
ooh, nah. good point.
Okay, go. I mean, yeah, I again, the timing of it is always weird. This is, as you pointed out on Twitter, which I completely forgot about, better than announcing it on election night.
I said that and I disagree. I think it's so much funnier for them to announce. They should always do this on election night. Yeah. They should only do the gold gloves every 4 years and announce them on election night.
That's funny. That's kind of funny. Only doing them every 4 years. I think it also feels weird because we do the rest of the awards later. And so it's like this, we're like not ready to be talking about this. I just enjoy them because it's reasons to celebrate players we otherwise are never going to talk about. And in this case, that's two players on the Rockies, right? Ezekiel Tovar and Doyle, Brent Doyle, who might win in center field every year for the next 10 years. And by the way, if Tovar is winning it this year, he might also be winning it every year for the next 10 years. The fact that he was able to beat out, you know, his competition, Swanson, win. And then, of course, he's the reason why Lindor was not a finalist. So he was very impressive. There are a bunch of players on this list that I enjoy watching. But anyone else stand out?
I have two. Mm-hmm. One is Dalton Varsho, who won it in center field in the American League. That's awesome. He deserves it. What a fun defensive player to watch, especially for a player who was drafted as a catcher and was a catcher in the major leagues for multiple seasons, and then won a gold glove in center field. That is completely bananas. And then the other one I think is worth highlighting is Matt Chapman, who should go down as one of the best defensive third basemen of all time, winning his fifth career gold glove. And then, of course, Juan Soto robbed for American League right field. Despicable.
Soto, the finalists were Soto, Joe Adell, which is in some ways even more amazing, and then Willy Abreu, who ended up winning probably quite comfortably. But yeah, that one is, how many times Soto's going to be a finalist? I'll probably be the last time, I would guess.
This is not fair, and I don't believe what I'm about to say. They should not do corner outfielder gold gloves. Like, if they didn't do corner outfielder gold gloves, I would care more. I just think it's like, you are worse at defense than like eight of the center fielders, at least. It just feels so silly to give Willy Abreu an award for his defense when he's not good at it compared to other center fielders.
You want to say it to Stephen Kwan's face?
Yes.
Three-time winner?
Yes. Sure.
All right. That's disrespectful. Obviously, I'm hyped about Kyle Raleigh and Dylan Moore winning. And then, yeah, I mean, Bobby Witt, right? And Bregman winning his first one. So part of it with Chapman, you know, leaving the American League, and now Arenado kind of being done winning gold gloves because Chapman's now in his league, it seems like, and Brian Hayes is in the other league. Alex Bregman winning his first one, which is kind of cool. But anyway, I hear what you're saying. And then the pitcher ones always make me laugh, like Chris Sale winning. And I was
Sale.
Okay, that was something. All right. That's
because, you know, when I think back about Chris Sale's 2024, I say great defense,
man. You know who didn't win the gold glove, Jake?
Garrett Cole.
All right. Let's talk about Garrett Cole for a couple minutes. There was a scary headline for people who were not following this closely the other day when it was announced that Garrett Cole opted out. What? I didn't know Garrett Cole had an opt out. Garrett Cole signed a massive contract with the New York Yankees after the 2019 season.
And then COVID happened.
And then COVID happened. In that contract, Garrett Cole was able to opt out of the final 4 years and $144 million remaining on the deal, which he did. However, if he did that, the Yankees, I can't really remember a contract being like this, but I'm sure it's existed before, but this is certainly the most prominent example. However, normally players, they opt out. Okay, boom, they're free agents. In this case, the Yankees have the opportunity to just add on another year at $36 million and thus void his opt-out. So what that means is basically the Yankees deciding instead of letting Garrett Cole walk, they can just have him for $5,180 instead of $4,144. Now, at the time we are recording this on Monday morning, we have not gotten official confirmation that the New York Yankees will be making the decision to keep Garrett Cole for five more years at $180 million. However, that is the vast assumption as to that happening. So really the only thing to say about this is it is Garrett Cole pretty much was in a situation here. Now the timing here is pretty amazing, of course, because of how their season ended. But this is just strictly business that obviously Garrett Cole was going to do this knowing that they were going to pick it up. Now you could point out, as some people have, if you completely remove the sentimentality and how important Garrett Cole is to the Yankees, is Gerrit Cole with the season he just had? You know, would you be giving him 5 years, 180? I think we probably would. But there you could at least be like, oh, okay, there's at least some amount of risk there for sure. But I think we understand that this is going to be resolved pretty comfortably and he will remain a Yankee.
The whole point of the way this contract was set up is to ensure that one of the two sides would be incentivized to keep Gerrit Cole in pinstripes for the entirety of the contract. Now, he had a year in which it got really close to that perfect midpoint where he might opt and the Yankees might not pick it up. Still, was I surprised that he opted a little bit? I think if his season is like 5% worse, he might not opt. If his injury lasted another month or he was not as good once he got back, maybe he doesn't opt because he doesn't want to risk it. But I think the Yankees are going to pick this up. It's just a very funny headline. The other opt that I do want to talk about is Jordan Montgomery opting into the second year of his contract with the Arizona Diamondbacks at $22.5 million. The context here is important. Jordan Montgomery, incredible in 2023 for the Rangers, Boris Kleien, lasts really far into free agency last winter, ends up signing with the Diamondbacks on a two-year deal with an opt-out after the first year. An opt-out he did not take, which is notable because about a month ago, the owner of the Diamondbacks said the following about him. Quote, if anyone wants to blame for Jordan Montgomery being a Diamondback, you're talking to the guy that should be blamed. This is Ken Kendrick, right? Because I brought it to the front office's attention. I pushed for it. They agreed to it. It wasn't in our game plan. Looking back in hindsight, a horrible decision to have invested that money in a guy that performed as poorly as he did. It's our biggest mistake of the season from a talent standpoint. You never hear this. You never hear leadership trash their own decisions and trash a player like this. And for them to do it to a player who is still on the team, he's still on the team. He's going to have to show up in camp if they don't trade him and just be on the Diamondbacks. Now, obviously, Jordan Montgomery opted in because he wouldn't get more money than this on the open market right now because he was ass. And I would take $22.5 million to work for someone who said that was the biggest mistake of their season. Sure. Please, I'd do it for half. It is just creates a very fascinating scenario where the only options now are Montgomery rolls into camp and knows that management hates him or they trade him. Both are interesting. I think trading him will be very difficult because I don't want to trade for Jordan Montgomery at $22.5 million.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, this isn't a great, this probably is not how you should handle this. I mean, he was the worst pitcher in the league. Like, like the thing is, this doesn't mean this is how you should be talking about the people you're paying, but he did have the highest ERA of any pitcher with 100 innings, pretty much by far. And so that creates a situation where, yeah, Jordan Montgomery knew, like, yeah, I need to opt in. I need to pitch better. And by the way, you know who else knows he sucked this year? Jordan Montgomery. And it's not like he's going to be incentivized to suck again just to stick it to the guy that's signing his checks. No, I don't think it really changes that much. It is just an unusually strange way to see this, specifically when we're talking about the owner saying, like, this, I screwed this up, right? Because the accountability there is in some ways admirable and then also uncomfortable, you know? It's so unusual that, like, I'm not even really sure what to make of it because nothing's changing, to your point. And remember, Jordan Montgomery, who already was not happy about how that all went down to begin with, the fact that he ended up waiting until the end of spring training to sign. That's why he ditched Scott Boras basically immediately after signing this contract. All of it is just unfortunate, I would say. And I do not expect Jordan Montgomery to be anywhere close to this bad next season. Would I have been excited to sign him last year regardless for the amount that he was originally seeking? Probably not. But I think he'll probably be just like a fine pitcher next year with a regular spring training.
To me, it's simple. If you're the owner of the Diamondbacks, you can say this exact same thing in a kinder way where you're not creating a news story. Yes. Like, there's just a different way to say these words. Yes. We have a couple other nuggets. I think let's kick those to Wednesday. The White Sox have a new manager. The Angels traded for Jorge Soler. There's just a lot going on. Fortunately, we podcast 3 days a week, and we will continue doing so on Wednesday. Thank you all for listening. Jordan, thank you for doing the podcast with me. Thank you to Andrew Hartz for producing. And thank you to the Dodgers.
Yes. Thank you to the Dodgers for giving us so much content to talk about. And by the way, I have a feeling we're going to keep talking about the Dodgers. Maybe more looking ahead than behind. But indeed, there is much more to get to, of course, with we'll have a lot more news tonight on Monday night that we will get to later this week. So thank you all for listening. Thank you to producer Andrew Hartz. As always, you can email us at baseballbarbacast@gmail.com. That's BARBcast. Thank you all for listening. We will talk to you all.